This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Brightside Home Theater.
How long have you been listening? You're fairly new, right?
Well, you know, I believe I started listening to you about the time you guys had your first Thanksgiving with the HT guys and AV Rant, right about then. And it seemed to me before that, Ara was mentioning Brightside Home Theater on their podcast, because I've been listening to them guys since probably the very beginning. If it wasn't the beginning, I, you know, caught their previous episodes and listen to them. It's, you know, that was back, geez, that's got to be back in 2004, 5, 6, somewhere around in there. But yeah, then after that Thanksgiving podcast, that's when I started listening to you. I've been more of a lurker and everything. And, but yeah, I've been listening more and more. And
that's, I love that part. I love that, like, when people like yourself come forward after listening for a while, and I'm like, it's, I've said it on the podcast before, like, they tell you when you, not they, just when you start talking to people and you're like, I don't know how many people are listening. And like, you're looking for feedback and stuff, especially when you're starting out. And they, people I've talked to are like, yeah, only like 1-2% of your listenership usually reaches, you know, back and like communicates with you. And I was like, really? Okay. And you know, and it's funny, like you said, like yourself, it's like, you've been listening for a while, and what you emailed me just a little while ago for the first time, right?
Yeah. You know, it's one of them deals. I've, you know, would listen to you mowing the yard, riding bike or whatever. And I'm recently retired, so I've been getting out and riding bike every morning, and I listen to your podcast. And when I'm out there, I'm thinking, man, you know, so much of this stuff relates to me. I need to write in sometime, just, you know, tell them kind of my story. And, you know, you know, I was kind of skeptical at first. I didn't know if I wanted to get on a podcast and do this. But, you know, it's one of them deals where, like you mentioned before, you just, there's not a lot of people you can talk to about this right. stuff all the time. And it's just nice to let it out and everything. And
yeah, and it really is. It's funny because, I mean, it's great for me, too. And I said, what, this past week, I said to John or somebody, I was like, we got to. And I was joking, but then I thought about it afterwards, and I said to my wife, I'm like, I've got to get my wife on and maybe get some other spouses on that would come and be like, yeah, this is great, because now he doesn't talk to me anymore. He leaves me alone. Because we really are. It's like, it's hard to find people to talk about this stuff. And and I know exactly what you mean. I've done the same thing with podcasts as well. Like, they ask on the podcast, oh, reach out, let us know what you think, and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, yeah, you're driving or mowing the lawn or whatever. And when you finally do write in, if you ever do, but you always think you want to, but then you sit down to do it. And I remember the first time I wrote into AV Rant, that email took me about 2 months to write. Because I kept like, oh, I'm going too long, so I take stuff out, and then I'm saying stuff. And so I completely understand how it is for people, so I completely appreciate, I've said it a million times, people even just coming on, you know, because that's a step, that's an extra step to actually come on. So thanks, Mark, I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem, I appreciate you asking me, it'll be fun.
Yeah. So how long have you been into home theater?
Oh, gosh, I tell you, you know, ever since I was a kid, I can remember, you know, liking stereos and stuff like that, you know, and there was one audio store in town called Team Electronics, and they had a catalog, and I'd just wear the pages out in that catalog, and older brothers had, you know, stereos and stuff. But when I first got into home theater, it would have been 1996, because I can definitely remember it. I have a brother down in San Antonio, Texas, and my brother up here in Fargo, his family and I, we drove down there on 4th of July to see him in 1996 and spend a week with him. Well, one night we sat down, my brother in Texas said, "You want to watch a movie tonight? There's this Jumanji." So we sat down and he had, you know, it was like a Bose theater set up and it was Dolby Pro Logic back in the day, you know, and everything. And we sat down and watched that and we got done. I told him, I said, I got to get me one of these. And it was just, you know, downhill after that. Came home and got a Dolby Pro Logic receiver, and I already had some speakers, and then I added a, you know, center channel and some surrounds, and then it wasn't long after that, and then Dolby Digital came out. So, well, I found somebody to sell that old receiver to, got a Dolby Digital, and, you know, DVDs came out, and, you know, just it kept on going from there. So
it is pretty cool how you can, how quickly you can get that bug. Like, you saw it, you like, this is possible, and next thing you know, you're just like, oh, you're going home and you're like, you see your room in a different way, right? You're looking like, where can I put stuff?
Yep.
It's so cool. It's so much fun. I don't know why, and this is going to sound weird. I remember the smell of the first center channel I bought. Just when you said that, like buying your first center channel, and it just like triggered in my head that memory. I remember taking it out of the box. I remember putting it on top of the television. Center channels back then, the unique thing about them, they had to be magnetically shielded because they were specifically to go on top of a CRT television or underneath. Yep. And you couldn't do that with a regular speaker because it would ruin the television.
Right.
So not only were they on their side, a speaker on its side, but it also had that additional feature that that's outdated now. It doesn't matter. But yeah, I remember taking it out of the box and I remember putting on, and like, I got a center channel now. Woo.
Yeah, I remember when I finally went and got some newer speakers, cause they were older and stuff. And you know, the foam around the edge of the cone was ripping and stuff. And I thought, I got to get some new speakers. So there's an electronics store in town, Carl's Electronics. And I went and I ordered some Infinity speakers, towers and center and surrounds, and then subwoofer. And I think it was a Friday morning. They called me, hey, it's in. So I talked to the guy I work with, hey, I got to take the afternoon off. So I went, it's just, you know, it's like a new car smell, you know, I got them home and man, I was so excited to get it set up. And oh yeah, that was a blast.
Oh yeah. It's, I've told this here before. I think my boss, I was probably 19 years old and I was working at a video store, Stop and Shop Video out here. And he comes up to me and he's like, look at what I just bought. And I look in the back of his car and he bought two giant tower speakers out of his white van, out of this white van. And he's like, come on, we're going to put them in my house. And he lived like three towns away. So he was my boss. He pulls me out of work, out of where I'm supposed to be working. I go to his house. I install the speaker systems for him, put everything, I line everything up. I get it all connected to his receiver. We test it all out. We're doing all this stuff. And he's like, all right, come on, let's go. And I was like, oh, what are we going to do about work? And he goes, oh, you're going to go punch out. Okay. So I ended up getting 4 hours of overtime, but I was only in work for like an hour. And I went to his house, but he's like, I think that's my first professional job. Like, oh, but funny. Yeah, you're like, people are so excited when they get their stuff, and we're those people, but it's like you get that stuff and you can't wait to listen to it. John just bought a new amplifier, and we'll talk about it on Friday, but he texted me yesterday morning, and he texted me about installing it and stuff. He got up early in the morning, installed it, and he goes, now I got to go to work. He can't even play with it. I'm like, what fun is that?
Yeah, no but kidding.
That's what happens.
Yep.
So what are you running now? I mean, it sounds like you went from 0 to 60 there or 0 to 40 and then jumped to 100 by that Infinity setup. Like you had Frankenstein and then went all hog wild.
I'm trying to think when I had the system I had for a while. I had different receivers and stuff, but I think it was back like in 2015. You know, listen to the AV rant guys, you know, and dual subs and SVS and everything. So I decided, you know, I'm going to get a sub. I'm going to get an SVS sub. And I got an SB2000. I really wanted to get the PB2000, but it just didn't have the room at the time. So I got that. And it was just like when I put that in, I thought, wow, that's what a real subwoofer sounds like. You know, and then they're always talking dual sub. So, man, I need to do this. I need to get another one. And I think I bought them both through their outlet store. But then I needed a new receiver that's going to have, you know, I wanted the Odyssey XT32 so I could, you know, calibrate them both. So then I got a Denon X4000 off of Accessories for Less, like they're always talking about. That was like in 2015. Well, you know, I had that, and then like something went wrong with one of my Infinity Towers. So I just, you know, thought the SVS was good. I thought I'm going to give their system a try. So I got the Prime Tower and Center and Satellites, and I've been really happy with them. And I plan on when I do some upgrading down the road here, I'm gonna upgrade with them too. But just trying to think here. Well, and then it was like probably Black Friday of 2019, I think it was. I just had the itch. I want to get a different receiver, you know. And I actually came upon a good deal on a Marantz 6014, I think it was. It was like $1,000 off. So I thought, ooh, you know, I'm going to get it. And I got it and set it up and liked it. I thought, well, this will, you know, get me down the road when I want to start upgrading to Atmos and everything else. Well, about that time, and I also, you know, would lurk around on Audioholics, read their stuff and their forums and everything. And they had a giveaway going on. And it was a Marantz AV7705 they listed. And I thought, well, you know, you can enter this and, you know, never win these kind of things. Well, you know, I had this new Marantz, and all of a sudden I got an email in January of 2020, and I'm just, this can't be right. Congratulations, you won, you know.
Oh, wow.
And so I got it, and it turned out to be the 7706. It was the newer model.
Ooh, nice.
And lucked out, a guy at work, his son-in-law, son-in-law and his wife were building a new house, and he wanted to put a theater downstairs, and the guy at work, we'd talk theater stuff, and I said, "Oh, geez, you know, I'll sell him this receiver." I said, "It's like practically brand new, and he's going to get a good deal on a nice receiver." So I was able to sell him that and recoup my money. And I'd always heard, like, you know, I think it was R and other places, you know, AV guys talking about Emotiva. Mm-hmm. So then I got myself a XPA Gen 3 7 channel. I wanted to get the 11 channel right away, but they were out of it at the time. And I couldn't wait, you know. I wanted to get an amp. And so I ended up getting that. When I talked to the Emotiva guys, I was mentioning, geez, I kind of want the 11 channel one. So that I got the Atmos capability when the time comes. He says, well, you know, I know it's more money, but a lot of people will get like one of them BASX amps and use that to run the overhead. So that's my whole plan is
that's what I have.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I have pretty much. I have a 5 channel Emotiva and a 6 channel BASX. So
yeah, they're good amps.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah.
Oh, it's amazing how cool that thing runs, you know. I put my hand on top of that, you know, just when something's really thumping, and I'd go and I think, man, this thing just gets warm. It doesn't get hot, because that Denon receiver I had to get one of them AC Infinity cooling fans and put it on top of that, because that thing would just kick off on me if I was, you know, really, you know, watching a heavy action movie and everything. And then it quit doing it after I got that fan. But so I'm a believer in the Emotiva too. That's good stuff, I think.
Oh yeah. And I think that, and I'm just guessing, I'm not an expert on this stuff, like, you know, like Rob would know, or even the, you know, HT guys. When you're running a more powerful amp, it doesn't have to work as hard, so it doesn't get as hot, right? So it's like, I mean, I've noticed the same thing. And I know I bought my AC Infinity back when I was trying to run my a receiver. Maybe two receivers ago, I was trying to get to reference level in my room, and I couldn't because it was getting too hot and it would keep tripping out on me. I didn't know that's what it was. And it would just, I was like, I'd watch a movie and I'd be about half hour into a movie and the receiver would just go poop. It would just shut down. And you try to turn it back on. And once it cooled off, it would turn back on. So it, you know, the safety feature. And after a little bit of this, I was like, all right, well, it, you know, it didn't happen every time because at the time I wasn't watching reference level every single time. I was watching at like maybe minus 10 and it was okay. But then I'd go to like minus 5 and it might trip out a little bit later. But then if I went to reference level, it would trip out sooner. And it probably took me 6 months to figure out what it was. I wasn't listening to any podcast or anything. I'm just guessing on my own. So then I was like, oh, let me see if they have any kind of fans like for computers. I didn't even know what AC Infinity was. So I just Google it and I'm looking up and I'm like, oh my God, look at this. They have a thing that goes right in your rack and you put,
oh, they're cool.
Yeah. So I put that thing in and it's been running. It has never tripped out since. And I run everything at reference level now. And ever since that happened, I was like, oh, let me try this reference level. I ended up doing it as a test to see if I could get it to trip out. And I wanted to see how high I could get the temperature on it because it has a temperature readout.
Yep.
And I was like, this is awesome. So I'm like running the fan. I'm both, it was fine. I haven't tripped out since.
Oh,
and I did a concert night with my wife. I got that thing up to like 105.
Oh, wow.
Playing, we were doing a Def Leppard concert. And this was on that, I don't know if you were listening at the time, the app, it was a Quibi or something like that. Not Quibi. Quibi was Quick Bites, I think, or so. It was a concert one, or whatever it was.
Yeah, and I can't recall it either. But.
Yeah, and we had a blast with it. But you know, movies are reference level, so it's like reference level means like it's going to get loud for a little bit, and then it'll come back down to a dialogue. A concert video, it's just loud the entire time.
Oh yeah.
So your system is cranking and it's like we were literally in there dancing, having fun and stuff, and every now and then I'd run out of the room and go to my theater closet and go, look at that, it's like 105. Like woohoo. Just over the fan. I had the doors open to like the back door. I have two doors to my theater closet so I can ventilate it if I really need to. And I had the back door open to it so the air could blow through. But it was cranking at 105 up there. But never tripped out.
Yeah, they do their job, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually bought a new one to add into my system when I got the Marantz, because I wanted to make sure I could cool everything off. I thought it was going to get hotter. I still haven't unpacked it. I haven't needed to. And I'm going to install it because I just want to, and I like the look of it and having digital redux and stuff in the middle. But yeah, it's like they're fantastic. They do a great job.
Yeah, no, that's kind of my plan too. Is right now I'm in the process of building a house, so I'm living in an apartment, and I haven't had my surround sound since like the middle of June when I had to pack everything up to move, and it's just killing me. Because I listen to you guys talking about different shows and movies, and you know, I can't crank my Vizio soundbar in an apartment and get the same enjoyment I had before. You know, so I'm just, all this stuff is stockpiling up on me that I want to watch. You know, I've been catching up on rewatching some older movies and stuff like that. But you know, I have watched a few like that Prey on Hulu. I watched that and. But it's just not the same, you know. It's
yeah. I am so lucky. I'm going to be building a house soon. I'm in the process of looking for land right now and doing all of that. But I'm lucky because my son is taking this house, so we're not in a hard, like I don't have to leave. You know, like usually when you build a house, you need to sell the one you're in so that you can build like you're doing.
Yep.
And you need to get out of there so you could, I don't have to get out of here. And it's like, actually when I leave, I'm taking my clothes. My son will get the house. So it's like, we're just building and refurnishing a new house for ourselves. But home theater wise, I am probably never going to be without a theater. It's, I mean, if I want to, I can always just come back here and watch a movie, right? Once I move, I think it'll be that gap of once I'm into the house, I'll finish the theater. But I have, as I'm building the house, once the basement is capped, which is what we call it out here in New England, So I don't know if you're familiar. Are you familiar with that term? Do you know what that means?
Yep.
Okay. So yeah, once you have that first floor on, literally just a floor for anybody that doesn't know what it means, it's you pour a foundation because a lot of places in the country don't even have like a basement foundation. Once you pour the foundation, you cap it by putting the first floor on. There's nothing on it. It's like basically just roofing your basement. Once that's done, my buddy pours concrete. We're going to pour the floor. And then that's it. It's like, while they're working on the rest of the house, I plan on framing out where the basement goes, where the theater's going to be, and do all that. And that'll be my extra time there while the rest of the house is being built. So hopefully, fingers crossed, if things go according to plan, which they never do, I'll be able to just like move in and maybe take a few weeks to fine tune everything and put some paint on the walls or something like that. I don't know. But, I'm very, very lucky in that aspect that I'm hoping I never have to go without a theater.
Yeah. No, that's what's so funny. It was a few months back. Was it back like in May or maybe April? You had somebody on and you guys were talking about, just this, you know, looking for a new house, planning a new house, and how you'd be driving by and you'd be thinking about, man, I wonder what that place has got inside. And that's exactly the way I was looking at stuff, because I knew I was going to be making the move and looking for a place. And at the time, I never dreamt I was going to build another house, because, you know, I just thought, man, the last one was, I just hated putting that yard in and all the work that goes through it. But so I figured I'd be buying an existing house. But it ended up where I decided to build. And you know, when my brother was and I, we went looking with a realtor one day. And I'd go into houses when we were looking. First thing I'd look for, okay, where am I going to put this theater?
Yeah, well, right.
The floor plan I decided to go with, when I walked into that family room in the basement, I knew right then and there, because I could light control. It's not going to be just a totally dedicated, but it's close to a totally dedicated room, because I can shut the doors to the rooms downstairs and kill the light that way.
Right.
Now the only, you know, unknown is how much light's going to come down the stairways there, but I just figured I can put something like a curtain to pull across. You know, I've had a million things going through my mind on what to do down there, and I've watched countless hours of YouTube and everything else. But it's gonna be cool. I guess I went a lot different than I thought I was gonna go.
Yeah.
With this whole thing, but I got this past week, they had 4 days this week to work on it, because, well, Monday was Labor Day, but it's just amazing how much stuff has gotten done this past week. Yeah. I mean, there was plumbers and electricians and the HVAC guys there, but I stopped there Friday night and looked around, and they had my speaker wire all pulled and everything and
nice.
Where I wanted it. And looked like about the only thing they had left to do was pull Cat 6 and coax, because I'm putting 4 coax in the family room for subwoofers. I got going to have 2 to start with, but just in case I want to go that 3rd and 4th subwoofer,
nice.
You know, I just figured I better be prepared that way. So, yeah, that's
getting awesome.
Getting close to getting that time when I can get into the thing, hopefully.
It goes a lot quicker. When we built this house, I was surprised at how fast it goes and how quickly things. When we built this house, I was actually one of the like vendors, if you will, like one of the people, because I did the paint work, I did the tile, I did a lot of the stuff on the house to save money so that they didn't have to hire somebody to do it. And so I was in here, and it's amazing to watch how fast it goes up, because once the foundation's poured, then you're just sitting there waiting, and you're like, when are they going to start it? And they're like, oh, we're starting next week. And next thing you know, like 2 weeks later, you're like, this house is practically done. It looks like it, because they frame it, they get it up, it's roofed and everything.
You know?
And you're like, what the hell? That it goes so fast. And now, since when we built the house, the guy my sister was dating, who is now her husband, that's what he did. He was a framer. So they were just dating at the time. So I would have had him frame the house too, but now I'm hoping he's going to frame this house that I'm about to do. But, it's like, but nothing ever goes as planned, right? It's like, for all I know, I could end up in a already built house. I don't know. It's really whatever opportunity opens up and you're like, oh, okay, this does seem pretty good. And then you commit to that. But it's like, it never goes as planned. And that's why when I drive by houses, I'm still doing that. And it's like, you can picture where things could be, even by looking at like, where's the chimney on the house? So if you know where the chimney is, you kind of get an idea of where in the basement, if they have the exhaust for the, you know, the heating system and stuff like that. So you're like, okay, so it's all on that side. Well, it looks like a pretty big side of the house. The alley columns are going down the middle, most likely. So you start, and now, I mean, I've only traveled about 30 feet, and now I'm on to the next house doing the same thing. It's like, all right, how does this work? All right. Never mind when you actually go into somebody's house. All right, I could work with this floor plan. Like you said, like you go into a new person's house you just met or something, and you like go over for dinner, and you're like, oh, yeah, look at, oh, yeah, I could put a theater in here. And it's like, and God forbid, has this happened to you? Somebody asks you, like, oh, you're into home theater? I was thinking of doing it. And then all of a sudden it just starts spilling out. Oh, we could put one in this room over here if you want.
Yeah, it was funny last weekend up at my brother and sister-in-law's house, and they got half a twin home, and their neighbor has a projector and screen downstairs, and text Mike and said, hey, mind if Mark comes over and looks at your setup down there? So my brother and my niece's daughter, little girl, we went over there, and Mike was showing me his stuff, and it was just like, man, I felt like I was a Gatlin machine gun, just talking. All I could do is just talk. We were talking the screens and the projectors and the aspect ratios and blah, 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 blah. And my brother's just over there looking like, what are you guys talking about? You know, but it was both. He even said the same thing. I said, geez, thanks for letting me vent. I said, I've had this built up on me for so long because this has been just center stage in my mind, you know, with this building and trying to get things coordinated. But yeah, that was fun to have somebody to talk about with, you know.
That's funny. Like, so he asked him if it was okay if you came over, your brother asked, like, can he come over? And like, now did your brother know that was like a therapy session for you? Like, was he planning it that way?
I think he called afterwards. He said, yeah, I just had to come back. You guys were talking Greek to me. So he said, I might as well come back and let you guys go at it. So
how was this guy? Like, now, who is this person? Your brother's neighbor or something?
Yeah, brother's neighbor. And then he's kind of in the, what does he do? He works for a company that installs, you know, like security systems and home automation and stuff like that.
So he's in that kind of wheelhouse. Yeah. And, so that's a lot of fun. When you run into somebody like that out in the wild, oh, it's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
Did you hug him?
I probably should have, you know, thanks for all the therapy you gave me.
Oh God. I know. It's like, I know. Cause we talk like we started, like you, it's amazing that we can do this. Right. And this is what we got to do to talk to people. When you meet a person out in the wild, it's like, I think the last person I talked to was, a neighbor of mine, girl I grew up with, lived next door to me. Her husband, they put in a theater. And they're one of those people, they're actually builders. That's their contractors. So they have the money. But they don't know theater. They just wanted a theater. So I tried to talk to him and I started spilling and his eyes glazed over. And I was like, oh, and you see it and you get a little, you're like, but, and the whole time I'm talking to him, he'll be like, I'll start be like, he's like, I'm getting a projector. And he starts talking about, I was like, all right, well, what are you looking at for projectors and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I don't know. They're just putting one in. I was like, yeah. Oh, I was like, what kind of screen are you getting? White. I was like, okay. I was like, speakers. He's like, yup. No, that wasn't the question. I'm like, how many? He goes, he didn't know. I go, never mind. Atmos. He's like, he thought I was talking about something about Disney or something. I'm like, no, didn't have a clue. And he has a beautiful theater, nice seats, everything. And he's like, look, it's a great place out in front. And it's like for the kids to just lay down with their beanbags and watch TV. We put them in there while we go out, and he has a bar outside his theater in his basement. And it's like, and we all hang out here. We just put the kids in the theater. I'm like, okay. Like, to each his own. But yeah, it's like you had the exact opposite experience. You had somebody that's like, oh, this is great. No, no, this literally knows nothing about it. Speakers? Yep. Oh, well. So, yeah, I haven't run into anybody in the wild in a long time. Long time. I think I'd have to go back to my home theater, like when I went to the Laserdisc store and talked to people there, and you'd find out. Even then, I remember talking to people that just had a Laserdisc player, but they didn't have a decent setup. They didn't have even a living room setup. They just liked Laserdiscs, and they've just been collecting them, type of thing. So they like the look, but they just play them on their television through their television speakers, which I thought was really odd. That was that was the oddity, but there were people like that.
I know my brother in Texas, he had one at the time, and I can't remember what he had for movies, but yeah, that was something I never did get into because it wasn't long afterwards DVD came out, so I went that route and everything. And
well, yeah, if you started around 96, it's like DVD, literally, I think it came out 96, 97.
Yeah.
DVD pretty much came into existence, and then there was the very short-lived battle of DVD versus Laserdisc. And if you weren't already into Laserdisc, there was no battle, right? You're not, you know, once they come out with this little disc that looked like a CD anyways, which everybody was already comfortable with, you're like, oh, I could put a whole movie on here. Honestly, I am very surprised at the success of DVD and Blu-ray and the entire genre since then, because Laserdisc never really took off because it didn't record. It was big, it was better quality, but people couldn't wrap their head around, like, what am I buying this player for if I can't, the only thing I can do with this player is watch movies on it. And that was the biggest detractor that I was experiencing when I got a Laserdisc player. People would ask me, like, why would you do that? I had a VHS player. But nobody could understand, like, but you use your VHS to record TV shows and stuff. That's how we recorded everything back then, right? So when DVD came out, I'm like, well, it's the exact same thing as a Laserdisc player. It's just smaller.
Yeah.
So I am to this day still surprised that, I mean, look at what happened. Look at the market. It exploded. And people were fine with buying this standalone player that all it did was play this DVD. It does nothing else. And people were fine with that. So to me, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think you had mentioned on one of your shows, maybe the smaller format was more appealing to people. You know, you got a small disc compared to a big disc and everything. I don't know, did anybody ever rent laser discs back in the day? Or
yeah, there were a few places. Towards the end of my laser disc days, I did find a few places. And I'd said it before on the show, it had more to do with the fact that I was traveling more, driving with my job. I started at the job I'm at right now in 97. And the nature of my job is I drive from dealership to dealership and repair bumpers, right? So what I would do in a day is I could start at one end of the state and end up in New Hampshire by the end of the day just by bouncing to different dealerships. So I'd do my truck that I have now, and I don't travel like I did back then. I do 40 to 50,000 miles a year on my truck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm just always, but it's always in this area in Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New Hampshire. I haven't been to Vermont in years. That's 2 hours away, but I would do that in a day. So in that time I would look up like where could I find, and all of this was like internet at home and then MapQuest to find my way to like a Laserdisc store. And I did find places north of Boston that I could rent them. And I'd end up paying a late fee, but it was worth it to me because I'd rent it for like $5 and pay the $2 late fee. But I'd bring them back a week later when I was back in that area. And the people knew me. So it was, but that was late in my career and late in my Laserdisc career, I should say. And it's like, then DVD took over and then, you know, then Netflix. And maybe Netflix is the what that really did it, where people were like, if I can get this player, I can just, you go on the computer, you click on that you want it, and next thing, and they'll ship it right to your house, and they'll ship it back, and you'd always have these. I actually sent one back. I found one behind a wall when I was putting my projector in 3 years ago, three, four years ago. I pulled down the wall and I found an old Netflix sleeve with the movie still in it. It might have been The Godfather, to be honest with you. I think it might have been The Godfather. And you know what? I already had the postage on it, put it in the mail, sent it back. I saw a credit 2 days later on my account. I was like, holy crap. And that thing had been back there for a couple of years, at least.
Oh, funny.
Yeah. And it's because everything by then had been streaming easily. So I was like, oh, look, I'll see what happens. It wasn't damaged. It just had slid down behind my collection, the shelf I had for the collection. And so it was in perfect condition. I just dropped it in the, sealed it up, dropped it in the mail, and off it went. And I got my little late fee connection refund or whatever they had. I don't even remember what the amount was. I just remember seeing a refund. I was like, they didn't even have to do that. I just felt bad I still had it. So. And I already owned it anyways. So that's how long ago I had rented. I rented it before I bought the Blu-ray. So that was, oh, well.
Yeah.
So how long before you're in your house, and are you like, I know you're doing that sound bar, but do you have any semblance of your system other than the sound bar? Like maybe like your DVD player and stuff?
Yeah, you know, I've got my 70-inch Vizio that I've had, and then I've got my Panasonic UB820 and hooked up and everything. That was basically just because I had, you know, bought Best Buy had the Star Wars discs on sale, and I bought the first one, original Star Wars New Hope one. It had the 4K and Blu-ray and the digital code in there. And I've got a Plex server, so I you know, rip them to MKVs and, yep, and everything. And boy, I could not get that 4K disc to rip. It just came up with some stupid error. And that's like the second time I've had that happen. I've got the Jaws 4K, and that one would do the same thing to me. So I went to storage, and I dug my Panasonic out and brought it to the apartment, hooked it up, and then, well, is it the disc or not? Because I didn't know if it was the disc, it didn't play in that, I'd take it back to Best Buy. Yeah. Well, of course, I put it in the Panasonic and played fine. So, okay, yeah. Well, that's the way it goes. And it was just funny that last week I went out and I got Empire Strikes Back, and I ripped that, and that one ripped fine, you know. So I get the 4K and the Blu-ray set, I rip them both and put them on there. Well, I ripped both the 4K and Blu-ray of Empire Strikes Back, and I thought, you know what, I'm just going to throw this New Hope back in and see if it'll work. By gosh, the darn thing ripped for me. So I was just, man, I could have danced around the apartment. I was so happy that I got that thing ripped. But man, I kind of went off on a tangent on there. But yeah, that one was just frustrating me because I tried everything to get that, you know, yeah, searching the forums and everything to see what I could do. And I just thought, well, I'm just going to have to live with it. I want to watch it. I'll throw the disc in the player and that's where I'll go, you know.
But I know your pain. Doing that with the Zapedi was brutal. And trying to get all my stuff ripped for the Zapedi, and you put it in and different. I think I did have that issue with Jaws. I had issues with, there were a few others, I think. I don't know if I had the issue with Star Wars, but exactly like you said, it's like you try it over and over, and you wouldn't know because you would step away, because it takes like an hour or so to rip these 4K discs, and you'd step away, you come back, oh, it failed. Okay, try again. So it's like a day goes by, and you, all right, whatever, and you move on to something else. And like you said, after, like, just on a whim, it worked. All right.
Yeah.
Let it go.
It was just crazy because when I took that, I did the 4K disc first on Empire Strikes Back and put the Blu-ray in. And when I pulled that out, I mean, that disc was warm, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to put the other one in there once, see what happens. And yeah, lo and behold, it worked. But I was sitting there when I was watching the Make MKV thing, I'm going, man, I think this is going to work. And I'm watching the green progress bars go across, and it got down to 10 seconds, 5 seconds, 2, and then success. And I'm going, go figure, you know?
Yeah. It really, because I've done the same thing. And it'll be like 10, not 5, fail. And you sat there the whole time watching. It's still ticking. It's still ticking. Yeah. Did it freeze? Is it moving? All of this. So think of the pain and agony we go through so that when you're in your theater, you don't have to get up and put the disc in.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny. You're like, you know, if you just never were exposed to that and you just never knew there was another way, putting the disc in isn't that hard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I've ripped and re-ripped so many times. Yeah. I think I finally got a workflow down now that works pretty good. And because back in the day, I had a Windows Media Center PC that I had built and did that. And at that time, what would I rip them into? Oh, you could actually rip them into an ISO. And I had this, some program, movies, something, and it would just play the ISO. Well, when I decided to go to Plex, well, then I had to rip them into MKB. So I re-ripped and blah, blah, blah. I've re-ripped and it's just, but I don't mind doing it. You know, it's poor man's, you know, Kaleidoscape, but you know, I listen to what you say about Kaleidoscape and I go, man, that sure would be nice, but you know, I'm going to be dumping a bunch of money into this system to begin with. So I got to get my main stuff here first. What do I got to do for this new theater? I want to get that BaseX, Emotiva BaseX. I got to get four more SVS prime elevation speakers. Then I want to get, I'm going to get a server rack, a regular server rack, because I'm having all the wires into the utility room that's right through a door next door to the room that's going to be my theater. And I'm just going to put all that stuff in there. And then I'm going to get the screen and the projector and everything. So, yeah, and then hopefully the projector's in stock by the time I want to go order it.
What are you thinking of getting?
Well, I have been all over the board on stuff. I have changed screen aspect ratios. I've changed projectors because when I first started out, I really thought I was going to get an ultra short throw projector because I thought that was so slick. Because, you know, light rejecting, then I could still kind of keep the room as a little bit of a media room for, you know, have friends over, watch football games or whatever, you know, want a little light in there. Well, after beating my head against the wall, I just thought, there's no way I can put a center channel anywhere without being happy. Because, you know, I know I could go, I don't know that there's like much for acoustically transparent screens for, you know, the light rejecting material.
They are, but I believe they're really expensive.
Yeah.
You're adding like two different technologies together, and I'm not sure how well they perform either.
Yeah. So I find, and I get the whole behind the screen speakers, and you'd like to have the, you know, the speakers right there, but I like the looks of speakers too. I'm kind of old school, so I like that.
Yeah.
So I just decided, you know, I got to go with a regular long throw projector. Well, then all of a sudden, you know, well, what am I going to get? You know, I listened to Rob and Tom talk about them and everything, and I was really fired up about that new Epson LS 12,000, that laser one. Mm-hmm. Seemed like a decent price point. And I thought, well, here, that's going to be a couple grand more than what some ultra short throws were. Well, then after listening to them on my bike rides and everything, and, you know, Rob knows his stuff. I like listening to him because I can't believe a guy can remember what he remembers, you know. And
I know.
he was talking to somebody had rode in and he was talking. He said, you know, it's a little more money, but you might be better off getting this NP, what is it now, 1100? The NP5, I believe it's called now. It's JVC's newest one. It's not the lasers, but it's the lower end, the bulb one yet, but it's got that dynamic tone mapping in there.
Yep.
And I started looking in at that, and that's the one I believe I'm going to go with, unless I could all of a sudden find a B stock of the NZ7 or something. Cause you know, that's starting to get in with all I'm spending now, that's really starting to get into some money, you know, when you look at what those cost. But, and then a Seymour screen, I'm looking at their screen and I've talked to those guys and, they sell JVCs and everything. And they even said that if you buy the screen and projector from us, they'll calibrate the projector. They'll take it out of the box and calibrate it for you. Oh, so nice. I thought that was a pretty good service to do too. So anyway, Yeah, I was first initially looking at getting 126-inch 16x9 down there in the basement, and I got an 8-foot ceiling, so that's about as big as I could go.
About as tall,
then,
yeah.
Listening to more podcasts, well, I thought, well, how big could I go in a 235, you know, screen?
How wide, yeah.
How wide? Well, I could, so what my idea is right now is I could get, it'd be 140-inch wide screen, which would be 152-inch diagonal, 2.35:1, and figuring it out by their chart, that would still give me 120-inch 16x9 screen.
Nice.
So to me, that seems like a win-win situation.
Yep.
And that seems like what a lot of people will do if they're height restricted. Now, yep. If I had like 10-foot ceilings, yeah, for sure, I would go with a 16x9 screen. But then I can get the side masking from them. They make their masking already.
Yeah.
And the only thing that's got me a little worried is now when you guys are talking about like Top Gun and the variable aspect ratio, what does that actually do if you're in scope? You know, you got the widescreen. When it hits the IMAX scenes, does it just shoot off the screen or does it kind of shrink it down?
No, what you would do in your case is, so if you went with a, and I, first off, I love exactly, this is how I'm trying to get people to understand, like when you hear the debates about, you know, aspect ratio, if you go to with a 240 or a 16x9, which one do you get? And people saying that there's no right answer. And exactly how you described yours is exactly what I believe you should be doing. And it's more about the wall that you have in front of you, right? And I've seen people that actually they have a 240:1, but then they have all of this space above and below their screen because they bought into the marketing that 240:1, most movies are in this is what you want, but then they get upset when they go to a 16x9 movie. But you're like, you could fit in exactly what you said. It's like you're not really going to give up any height, you're just adding screen on to the sides to do the 240:1, right? So that's a perfect rationale in my thinking. It's like that's what you want. Now to get to be able to play Maverick on there and be able to experience the aspect ratios, you'd put your borders in, okay, your screen masking on either side, and you would have the projector now put a 16x9 image calibrated for that size screen. You see the 121. Mm-hmm. So you would have to, when you do this, you need to have a projector that can have lens settings.
Lens memory, yeah. That's what I like about this one is because that JVC has the lens memory that I can go between them.
Right. So that's where you would need it. And it's like, I was thinking of, like my theater, I have a 16x9 screen, but I'm as tall as I can go and I'm as wide as I can go. So when I put my masking up above and below, that's the exact 240:1 ratio screen I would have had if I only purchased a 240:1 ratio screen.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. And so it's like, if I had just bought a 240:1 ratio screen, that's what I would have. And then I would be throwing masking into this little tiny screen in the middle. Right. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to help people avoid, is that making that mistake and leaving space on either above your screen or to the side of your screen that you could utilize as screen space. That's all you're really trying to do. And you're doing that. The one caveat, this is the difficulty for me, is, and I might be running into this, I have no idea what the next wall I'm going to be looking at from my own theater, how big or tall it's going to be. Here's the issue that I might have an issue with wrapping my head around. So in your setup, okay, you say you install a 240:1 aspect ratio. Yes, you have that bigger, wider screen. But when you go to the IMAX and IMAX scenes or an IMAX movie, like Avengers is in 185, I believe, right? So that would be the taller.
Uh-huh.
You're always going to be getting a smaller screen when in actuality, the IMAX scenes or you know, a 16x9 scene or movie is supposed to be natively taller, right? It's supposed to be that bigger, dramatic. So if you end up with a 240:1, whenever you watch those movies, it's actually going to be having the exact opposite effect that those movies are intended to do. You see what I mean? Yep. Whereas yep. when they shoot a 240:1 scene, they're not shooting that to be, they're just shooting it for that aspect ratio. They're not necessarily shooting that to go, this is going to play huge. They know in most places on video, this is going to play slightly smaller. So we already have that mindset in our heads that this is, you don't mind it being narrower from height. I mean, you know, so that to me, it's like, I love the idea that when I go to watch a movie right now in IMAX, I take out my borders and you're like, what? It's just taller, right? Whereas, and like when you're watching Top Gun Maverick, you're watching those scenes. Now, I don't put my borders up because it's variable aspect ratios. When we go to those bigger scenes, you're like, wow, it is taller. But if you have a 240, you're starting with your smaller screen. Then you're putting in the masking there as well. So I don't know which is the correct answer. I get both ideas. But that's the one caveat for me, is that I still like my 16:9 images to be taller than my 240.
Yeah, that's where this variable aspect ratio actually favors a 16:9 screen.
Oh, it really does. Yeah.
But unless you know, I just, you know, with the 2.4, you know, the movie's going to be that way. You just leave the lens memory at 16:9. Is that what you're saying? And then it will... it's just going to be smaller, or if you stretch it out, then it's going to, when it goes to the IMAX scenes, is it going to shoot off the screen, or is it going to just all of a sudden shrink down and everything?
No,
and that?
No. Cause what you would have to do, see, what you have to imagine is everything. Like when you watch like Top Gun Maverick, just imagine that the entire movie is 16:9. But just sections of it have black bars in that 16:9 space.
Sure.
So you're constantly shooting a 16:9 image with your projector on the screen, right? And then the movie itself, actually, instead of putting color in a scenery in that area, they're just putting a black bar in that area. Right. You see what I mean?
Okay.
So, and if you watch the videos, like what Mad VR does really well for the low price of $15,000 is they'll actually, that thing has, it actually knows as the movie's playing, it sees that it has the black bars in there and just says, okay, now I'm going to take those out. And it actually switches the scenes for you. But then even that gets wonky, and I'm not a fan of it, but I see how some people would like it. And to be fair, like, I think the people that would like that would be like the guy I told you about, my neighbor married, that doesn't care, has no idea, but somebody came in, installed the Mad VR, that would be pocket change to him, and he puts it in, and it's like, I didn't even know Top Gun Maverick had variable aspect ratios, because it would just do it, and he wouldn't even know the difference. He wouldn't even know what variable aspect ratios are anyways. But
have you seen that latest video that Youth Man had with when he was at that Audio Advice deal, the event they had a couple weeks ago? Then he had a separate video this week with the Mad VR guy, and he was demoing all that kind of stuff, and it looked cool. But it, on the same hand, first of all, I don't know if I'd want to swallow that pill of buying that piece of equipment, really, you know. But it worked slick, but on the same hand, it's just like what you're saying. Now you're losing that what they were trying to get across in the movie and everything. And
yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's neat. It's fun tech. I'm fascinated by it, but at the end of the day, it's like, I still just want my normal, I want the movie to be played as it should have been played. And like you said, it's like, yes, a 16:9 is the most adaptable to all of these movies that we're getting. Yes. Most movies are in 240:1. Flat out. It's like not even close. I think Rob H put out, I don't know, months ago, he put out a thing like, look at, there's like 1500 movies or whatever in 185, or he tweeted out the list from IMDb, but it's like, whatever it is, it's like 10 times more in 240.
Sure.
But see, the problem to me is, if, yes, most movies are in 240 to 1, so when you watch all those movies, you're like, oh, this is great, but when you go to that 16 by 9 movie, you want it, to, in my opinion, you want it to be taller, and you want to have that rare instance where you go, wow. But what I'm finding on watching on Twitter, friends of mine that have the 240 screens, instead of going, wow, they actually get angry, right? Like, sure. Oh, why did, like, Top Gun Maverick, why do they do this? And they'll put the angry face, and you're like, I'm all like, I can't wait. And they're like, I would prefer to be able to put masking up because I like it. It's a, to me, it's a better image when I can black everything out with the velvet. But I just absolutely love the experience of Maverick. I think most movies, when they do variable aspect ratio, I think most of it, it's just gimmicky. But Maverick nailed it. It's not gimmicky. It's a great part of the movie. Yeah. You've seen it?
I haven't seen it since I went to it in the theater, but I've been holding out till I can hear it with surround sound, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's a good one. That's a really good one. That might actually make my list, my long-standing list of demo discs I put in when I do an upgrade. Like, obviously, Star Wars, Terminator, Jurassic Park. It's now to be able to, like, Maverick, for a new movie like that, to just be like, oh, I got to hear these, because I've heard them so many times already.
What you're doing with Maverick is what I did with Twister when I first got my DVD player back in the day. I watched Twister over and over again, you know, just loved it.
Wasn't Twister the first DVD? I think it was.
Yeah, it was one of the first ones.
It was the first DVD. It was like, and yeah, if I remember right, because I had the Laserdisc, and then I got the DVD for it, and you compared them, and yeah, that was one of the battles. That was where the battleground started. The shot heard around the world to nobody.
Yeah. Like, you know, and when I heard that about, you know, that aspect ratio, it really started me thinking, well, how am I doing the right thing on the screen and everything? And I just thought, you know, just go with what your gut tells you, and you can deal with it when the time comes. Because in this situation, I just think, you know, when you are watching a strictly 240 to 1 movie, there's going to be a lot more, it's going to be more immersive by having that wider screen, but I'm still going to have the same size 16 by 9 basically that I would have got the other way. So to me, it's a no brainer going that way. Yeah. But
and I think that's how I'll rationalize it as well when I finally do go in that direction. And I won't, if that direction happens, like if I have a wider room than I have taller, then yes, I would probably do exactly what you're saying. And those borders are actually easier. I've made those as well. They're easier to make because you don't have to worry about, like, when I made my top border, it was like you have to get the tension just right so that when you pop it in, it stays there, right? Sure. So you're measuring. The bottom one just sits in place. I have a Stewart screen, so you have the I have the nice thick velvet rim around it, you know, the frame around it, and it's probably like an inch and a half thick. So I put in that insulation, wrap it in velvet. You know, the pink foam insulation, the rigid.
Yeah.
And that's how I made my borders. And it's, I absolutely, ever since I made those, it was funny. I had made them and I've been using them for a while. And Tom on AV Rant's like, you don't need masking. Nobody, you'll use it like once. I'm like, are you kidding me? I can't wait. It's like, I love my masking.
Like, every video demo I've seen on even YouTube, and sometimes, you know, that stuff doesn't even translate good on YouTube, but you can instantly tell the difference. So I knew I wanted masking, and that was kind of nice about the Seymour screen. You can get masking in either direction, but these will be smaller panels that I can put in on the side. Cause I, you know, I watch plenty of 16 by 9 stuff. So I wanted to have it, you know, I can put it on the ends and everything. My big concern right now is that with this, the fixed screens that Seymour has, their premier line of frame, they like, that's the long part is all one piece. And I just, you know, this, the long part's going to be like 147 inches long. I thought, how am I going to get this into my basement? You know?
Yeah.
And they work it around the corner. But I actually, today, I want to go down. There shouldn't be anybody around working today. So I've got a roof snow rake, you know?
Yeah.
And I've got the sections. So I'm going to go out. I got it in my garage at the apartment. I'm going to pull that apart, and I'm going to put it together and see how long it is. And I'm going to take that snow rake with me, and I'm going to go down there and see if I can get it down there and through the corner. Otherwise, I might have to get it through an egress window well. Oh. Or the guys at Seymour said, if you really want to, we can cut it in half. So if I have to go that route, I will, you know. But it's something to play with. See if I can make the corner or not to get it down there.
I was going to say, you know how cool it would have been if you think of this while they're building the house. I got to get my screen in before you finish the basement. It's just like you literally built the house around it. Like we got it in because it wouldn't be able to get in. And yeah, it just sits down there like on a shelf. Like you put a shelf into the foundation just so it could sit and rest while the rest of the house is being built. And we're like, that's a big screen. Yeah, we built the house around it, literally.
Oh, yeah, they'd really be giving me looks there. Why don't you just get a TV? Oh, no way. Just the TV down here.
Yeah, that'd be so funny. Like, this guy's a nut. He's building his house around the screen.
Oh, yeah, and I've been working with the builder. I said, I need to get some extra bracing in the ceiling back here. What do you need that for? And I said, well, I want to have something I can lag the mount in for the projector.
Yeah.
Well, why is that so important? I just said, well, if you're spending $7,000 on a projector, you want to make sure
falling off the ceiling.
Stay up there, you know?
Oh, yeah, I shelved mine. I shelved mine on the back wall, and it is lag bolted heavy into the foundation.
Yeah.
It's my first one I actually mounted in the ceiling, but it was a little one. I want to say it was an Epson. I don't remember what it was. It was probably had to be 2004 or so, 2004 or five when I got my first projector. That was a experience, but I mounted that one to the ceiling, you know, mounted upside down. Ever since then, I think I've done a shelf. Everything has been shelf mounted at the back.
Sure. I've watched countless hours of YouTube on that too, trying to get the right idea and everything and which mount to get, because some of them got that fine adjust, you know, you can just turn the little wheel to get the different accesses just right.
Yeah.
There's that Dream Media YouTube channels. They seem to use that one a lot, and that does seem pretty slick, especially if you're a first timer setting one up and everything. Yeah. But we'll see. I think the Chief mounts, that seems to be a pretty popular one. So I guess a lot of it will come down to what I can get at the time too. You know, it seems like some of this stuff is kind of hard to get right now, but.
Yeah. It's, I remember my first, like learning about that, reading on the internet, how to set it up, how to set up a projector, what you got to do, like to get the, you got to get the lens, like perfectly square to the screen and centered and all of that fun stuff. And like what you're going through right now, yes, you're not in your theater. You have no theater, but it's still fun.
Oh,
building
yeah.
And anticipating and thinking. And do you do drawings? I do drawing. I went to school for it. But have you done drawings and stuff?
Yeah, I did. You know, I actually, when I went to technical school out of high school, I did a drafting program.
Oh, so all right. All right. Yeah.
I haven't done that for a long time, you know, and that's when they were using straight edges and pencils, you know.
But, oh, yeah. That's when I did it too. Yeah.
I actually drew up the room layout so I could give it to the electrician. And here's, you know, and I would measure out where the speakers are all going to go. I used that one, that setup tool that Audio Advice has on their website where you can put the different things in there.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of the dimensions and everything off there and set it up. And so I had everything. I put it in a spreadsheet where stuff was going to go and measurements and what it was and blah, 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 and took it to them. And it made perfect sense to me in my head because I've been dealing with it for so long but they kind of looked at it like, what the heck is this when I gave it to them, you know? But, you know, it all worked out in the end there. But, the thing I had, you know, and it's been fun. I've enjoyed the heck out of, you know, watching YouTube and researching stuff. But right now I've gotten to the point where it's just like information overload. You know, it'd be like, there's one guy, HT Guru, Home Theater Guru.
Yep.
His website, he does installs and stuff, and you know, he's really technical with everything, and a lot of it makes sense. But after a while, I just got kind of thought, I just got to quit worrying about some of these smaller details. I'm just gonna, you know, how I'm angling the speakers and everything else. You know, it probably would give you more optimal, but I just want to get these prime elevations, mount them on the ceiling, kind of get them pointed towards the seat and everything. I'm going to do my best and get it. But it just got to be too much. I just would see something new on a YouTube video, and I thought, I ain't even going to watch that because that's just going to get my head spinning again. Yeah. And I'm going to think that I got to do something different. I think my plan right now, I think, is going to be fine. And it's going to be better than what I imagined. But you just got to go with your plan after a while and not overthink it. And that's my problem. I'm an overthinker with too much time on my hands right now. So that's a nasty combination.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're in that situation, though. Like, you literally have no other choice. Right. And you end up just because of like your passion for this, you end up doing research just to, you know, to quench your thirst for all of this. And you still end up with, you know, analysis paralysis. And you're like, all right, I got to, and you have to back off a little bit because,
yep.
I mean, you know, you've been doing it a long time as well. It's like you can read about it and you can read other people's opinions and just everything I just went over about aspect ratio. That's just my opinion. Right. It's until you're in your room and you experience it and you're like, and you'll all the stuff you're reading about, like towing in speakers, you'll get in your room and you'll be watching a movie. And then they're like, at least I do. And be like, maybe I should try that. And you'll get up and you'll tow in your speakers and you'll listen to that for a few weeks and then be like, let me put them back and see if I notice a difference. That's where you can't read about this stuff. You have to experience it. Right. And it's like that to me, and when you experience stuff, it's not even like when you test out speakers, you have to test them out for like a month to really get a feel for it and to know, like, because just running a couple of your favorite songs or scenes or whatever, and you'd be like, okay, that was great, but you don't know. It's like until you're like over time that you'd be like, wow, I'm really noticing it pulling stuff out. Or maybe a month later, you're like, it was fun at the beginning, but now I kind of feel like it's just my old system again. Is that the case? Then you put your old speakers back in and go, yeah, there's really no, it takes time to experience that. But yeah, it's like you're stuck and you know, so it is nice to be able to watch the videos and read this stuff. Mm-hmm. You're probably learning some stuff that maybe you didn't know before, and you'll try absolutely. Eventually, but you know, it's like,
yeah, you know, like I was getting all caught up and, you know, read stuff. And like you just said, I got to get in my room and see how it is. But, you know, I did do a different paint scheme down there. I took Rob H's and Tom's advice. I went and Sherwin-Williams and, you know, that gray screen color palette there. I went there and I actually picked the second of the darkest that it's going to be in. I think it's called like web something. So I'm going to have that room painted that color, the ceiling and the walls, and then the little hallways that go to the different rooms. So that'll all be that color. And, but you know, I thought, you know, I've seen the, where people put like black velvet and everything up front to maybe give it more contrast ratio. And I was thinking, oh, I need to plan this. And I just, after a while, I just start thinking, you know, just get in the room, see how it looks. And then that'll give me, it may spawn some different ideas, and then I can do something different. And then, like with subwoofers, I've listened to Audioholics about subwoofers and stuff and the REW and all that kind of stuff. And maybe down the road, I'll try it, you know. It almost sounds like the easiest thing to do to get the best subwoofer sound in your room is get four subwoofers and put them in the corners, you know, and that takes out a lot of the nulls plus acoustic treatments. And I do have some GIK acoustic treatments that I bought during COVID and stuff there. I was walking, listening to a bunch of stuff. And, well, Rob and Tom talking about, you know, don't even think about different speakers until you've treated your room. Right. So I got some stuff, but now it's probably going to be a little bit different with this room, but I'm going to get a hold of GIK again and say, hey, this is what I got. What would you suggest? I don't want to go crazy but I don't want it to look like it's just a totally stuff hanging off of the walls, but I do want to treat the, what do you want to say? The most important, you know, the first reflections and all that
first
kind of stuff.
First reflections. And I would say your rear wall too. That's where I got the most bang for my buck. It's like, but to be fair, I had first reflections from day one with the design of my room. It's like, I think those went up like as I was building the room, like I painted the walls, let it dry. And then I put up my room treatments across the front. So I always had that, But then it was many, many years later. Well, it was when I put the projector in, really. So it was 4 years ago that I did the entire back wall is like 6 or 8 inches thick of insulation with just speaker cloth over it. And I framed it out, double framed, and then just put in the insulation. And then I just took a giant piece of speaker cloth all the way across the back and popped that on there. And then I put my shelves are bolted through the speaker cloth to the studs that I had put up. Right. And then when I started that in just that absorption, like everything coming from your front wall is going past you and literally just dying right there. The clarity that that allows, it has been amazing. And if you have that opportunity where you're building, and if you have that opportunity to maybe do your rear wall in speaker cloth or something and have that insulation exposed for all intents and just absorbing everything that comes back there, I recommend that. I mean, and that's, you can't get much cheaper. You don't have to buy anything. You're already insulating it anyways. You just don't drywall it, drywall it on the backside of it. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Or separate it from whatever room on the other side, but then you just put that insulation, nice thick insulation back there.
Yeah, I was thinking I've got some panels that I had behind the listening area at my old house, and I was thinking about putting those in the back wall because they're kind of got an image on the back, and I thought those would be good back there, but anything I put more that might be in view up towards front, I want it to be more neutral so it isn't reflective or anything.
Right.
But I actually got kind of lucky when I got them panels from GIK because I got a couple of those ones. I'm bigger. They're like 6 inches by 36 by 4. And then they've got the diffusion wood on the front and everything. So they had me put those behind the speakers on the front wall. And a couple bass traps that I put down on the floor in the front wall. Then they recommended these 2-inch thick ones to go behind the listening area that would kill that reflection coming off the back wall. So I had picked out some of their graphics they had on the website. Well, when I got them, one of them was wrong. So I contacted them and said, well, you know, this was the wrong image and blah, blah, blah. They went through and everything. They said, oh, yep, messed up. We'll send you a new one. Well, what do you want me to do with the old one? They said, just keep it. So, hey, sweet, I got a free panel. So I got the replacement in. Still wrong. So I called them up and they said, oh man, yeah, we'll send you out another one. What should I do with this other one? Keep it. So I ended up getting 5 panels for the price of 3. You know, and that stuff really isn't that cheap. You know, I don't mind spending the money to correct problems that I have, but I don't want to just go nuts and, you know, maybe someday I'd put something on the ceiling, but you know, some of that stuff, I think you can, I don't want it to look too funky either, you know, but I want it to do the trick, but not be, you know, gaudy or just weird looking.
I've always been a fan of stealth look, right? Like have things be functional, but you don't even know it's there. Like that's why I have my speakers across the front. They're behind the wall. They're behind the speaker cloth. So it's just a screen at the front of the room, but then all that sound comes at you. If I had my way, all my speakers would disappear. And that's what I want to do. Hopefully in the new room, everything will be like that. It'll be a room within a room. But then like what I plan to do is like actually certain segments of the wall will be just speaker cloth. And then it'll be dry, like down the sides. And then what I can do there is you pull the speaker. I'm going to make speaker grills for that entire piece of wall. Say it's a like 16 inch wide stud. You'd pull that speaker grill cloth off, and I could shelf anywhere I wanted to put a speaker in there. You know what I mean? So like I could literally use a real, like any kind of speaker I want, and I want to stud the walls that way. And then on the backside of that would be the wall to the exterior of the room, whatever it is. And just, you're basically going into a box, and inside that room will just be a screen. And originally when I designed the room I'm in now, I had it in reverse. It was supposed to be the closet where it is now. That was supposed to be the back of the room so that someday I could run a projector to the wall, right? From the the theater closet. So then the projector's not even in the room. But when I designed this room, I had no choice because I couldn't afford a projector at the time. They were really expensive in 2000, 2001, the entire system. So I ended up getting a Mitsubishi 65-inch rear projection television and mounting that in that closet behind the wall so it just looked like a screen, right? So I framed out the drywall around that so it just looked like a screen on the wall, and that was my room. So I had to go that route, and then I put in stadium seating, so everything's facing that way. But ideally, I don't even want my projector in the room. I want that in a closet behind the room, too. So that would help with sound and heat and all sorts of stuff.
If I'd have been, like, in the house and finishing the basement after being in the house, I probably would have taken more time and done something like that, you know? It's just, you know... And the way it is with this builder and everything, it's like, you know, you're buying the house, getting it built and getting into it. You know, I mean, it's just transition. I'm not complaining. I'm going to be happy with what I have, but I probably would have. In my old house, before I decided to move to a different town, I had my basement wasn't finished, and I was in the process of, okay, I'm going to finish this basement. I'll make a room. You know, I'd started putting waterproofing stuff on the walls just to be on the safe side, and I was going to do that kind of stuff. Well, then it got suggested, well, why don't you move up here when you retire? And I just thought, hey, that's a good idea. I like it up here and a little bit bigger town and everything, and well, quite a bit bigger town than where I was. But it just fell into the way it was. But now, on the same hand, I want to take and put all the speakers I have now and put them into the room other than what I have to add to get the Dolby Atmos or effects, because I like DTSX too. You know, that was I enjoyed your comparison to DTSX and Atmos too, because it's cool. But I'm going to put them in there. But then I've got my old Denon receiver yet. So my whole idea is I'm putting my 70-inch Vizio upstairs. That'll be up there, and I'll have my sound bar, and I'm going to put all the speakers and get the room downstairs done. But what I want to do is once I'm done and satisfied, then I want to take my center and towers that I have now and move them upstairs and hook them up to the Denon, and then I have more of a system up there, less the surround speakers, and put my two SB 2000s up there since they're sealed subwoofers. And then I want to get like some of them SVS Prime Pinnacles and an Ultra Center, and get a couple PB 2000s and put them down there. I've already talked to SVS about stuff, and actually my room, you know, I was all gung ho to get like some PB 3000s and or some SB 4000s. You know, they had some good prices on them SB 4000s on the outlet. Man, them babies are heavy though. I just thought, man, that's going to be a backbuster getting them downstairs. But talking to the guy, and he said, you know, really the 2000 series is probably more fitting for your room. And, you know, you look at like Audioholics, I've looked at their reviews on them, and I think it's just a hair over 3000 cubic feet down there. Well, that falls in on the high side of their Bassaholics medium room and the low end of their large room. So that PB 2000 is right in there, but the PB 3000 is more of like their, you know, whatever they call their real kick-ass subwoofers, you know, and it would save me some money too. So, and if I ever did end up going with four of them, well, you know, I guess you get more dB gain out of four or two in a sense a little bit, but I just thought, you know, that way would be a good upgrade path to take my old stuff, move it upstairs, get some new stuff downstairs. But I want to see what my have now would actually do in that size room, because it's a little, it's bigger than where I had it before. So
how big is the room going to be?
It is 18 wide by 22 deep with 8-foot ceilings.
That's a nice size room. That's a nice, really nice room. Yeah, that's what I'm shooting for, actually. That's a great size room.
Yeah. And I've got it figured out where I'm going to like put the theater seating about 13 feet from the screen. And then that's a whole other thing is, you know, theater seating. I got to figure out something there. And I'm just going to have one row of seating. The only thing that really worked out a little different is my rear surrounds are going to be a little bit higher than what Dolby would say to me, but one of them's to get them kind of the distance in from the wall. One of them's going to be right above a doorway. So I just figured, well, they're prime elevations. I'm going to put them up there. They can angle down. It is what it is. Sometimes you just have to work with what the room will let you do. But
absolutely.
And they're not the most important speaker in the whole setup, I don't think, you know, from what everybody else says. But, yeah.
No, they're not. It's you're just really just trying to get the effect up, to getting something up there to help bring that. Bring your ear, your brain up there. So it's like, I mean, you want to have something, but yeah, we're all at the mercy of our rooms. And that's the idea. It's like, you're building the room. So you're already way ahead of what a lot of us have to deal with, because you come into an existing room and it's now you have to deal with more compromises. When you're building it, you're going to be limiting those compromises even more. So that helps a ton. Yeah, so you're going 22 deep and you're going to have only one row of seating.
Yeah. You know, it's just kind of the way the room is laid out a little bit. This walkways to get to different bedrooms and stuff, it'll work out good. My whole thought there is, and I've seen this in other systems that I really like, is what I plan on doing is get like a bar table to put behind that row of seating.
Yep.
And then if you have people over to watch football, some people can sit in the cheap seats there and still watch the game, but you know, typically it's just me watching a movie. So I really don't need, I want to get like three seats, you know, because in case family comes over and we watch, and then if there's any of my niece's kids, they come over, I thought maybe beanbag chairs or something, whatever to throw around. But, I just am trying to figure out where I want to get seats. I've looked around at furniture stores here. The Ashley Furniture Store has some nice stuff. You know, you got your Valencias, you got your four seating stuff, but that some of that stuff can get up there in price. But what I really like is Costco has got some stuff that I like. I wish they would get it in the warehouse so I could actually sit in it. But Costco's got a pretty good return policy, so I thought maybe just get one of theirs because they have, and then see how it works, and then if it's fine, I could order a couple more. But they're got the adjustable headrests and power, recline and everything. That's all I really want is the headrest and the recline and have them be somewhat comfortable or be comfortable, not somewhat, but
I highly recommend testing out whatever you buy before you buy it. If you want any more information on that, you can talk to Mike Schramm and his experience.
I know you guys have talked about stuff. What, refreshing my memory, what was this?
It's not public. I don't want, if anybody knows, if you remember some Twitter feeds, they kind of went silent, and I respect that. I respect what Mike did there, but he made a purchase and it didn't go as well as he had hoped. And to Mike's credit, it was just his purchase. And I'm like that too. It's like, if I buy something and it didn't work out the way I wanted it to, that it's my opinion. And I don't like to do that to companies.
Well, yeah, but that's when you read reviews, you really got to take it with a grain of salt, some people. But when it comes to a chair though, that's going to fit everybody different. That's why I would really like to have something I can sit in before I buy it. So we're going to have to see what maybe Ashley Furniture Store will have a Black Friday deal or something. Because they've had some chairs there that I really like, but, I wish, Costco would get these in the warehouse, because if they were comfortable, man, I'd snag them up in a heartbeat,
Get them. The chairs I have now, I was lucky enough that I was able to go and try them out. Okay. It was a furniture store, Jordan's Furniture out here, and they actually had a room dedicated to theater seating. And we went in, I tried these out. This was in spring of 2002. I've had these chairs ever since then. And the only thing I've done with them is just rotate them, because every now and then, because I always sit in the same spot, but all the other chairs hardly ever get used, but they're like Legos. You have one chair, like I have a row of three. So you'll have one chair that actually looks like a chair. And then the other two just hook into that. They're one arm chairs that actually just drop in. So what I would do is so I have two full chairs and then three one arm chairs to make up I have a row of three, and my front row is only two. And what I've done over the years is I've just rotated those three on my prime seating position, right? And yeah, are they as firm and as probably they look exactly the same as they did? They're microfiber, which I prefer over leather because back when I got these, I didn't want leather. Leather's more reflective of sound and everything. And I found even in my new room, I want microfiber. If I can get it, I want microfiber or a very soft leather, like a suede, if sure. That's how I have to go. But I want microfiber. And these things have lasted me over 20 years now, you know, and I love them. And they're still comfortable now. Building and thinking about the new room, I said to my wife, I was thinking of like you have one row of seating. Nelson just built his theater down not far from me. He's got one row of seating. And I started thinking like that. I'm like, maybe I'll do that. Cause I've always been like, I want a bigger room, right? Than what I've had. Cause I've hosted mm-hmm. Super Bowls in mine. And I've had up to 20 people in my theater and it's only like 11 and a half by 18. And we're packed in there for a Super Bowl, but I've always dreamed of a bigger room, but now I'm getting older and we're not doing as many big functions with all these people. Our kids are gone. We're going to, for all intents and purposes, empty nesters. I'm like, what are we doing? So I said to my wife, I go, maybe I'll just get three seats. And she's like,
yeah.
What about the grandkids? The grandkids? I was like, okay, she wants more seats. I was like, all right, I'm back. Didn't have to twist my arm, but I was like, yeah. I was trying to think of ways, smaller rooms, save money. She's like, no, we need big. We want the kids in there. We want okie dokie. It's like, let's go.
Heck yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of what I was thinking. I was, you know, I looked at, you know, some of them where you got two seats and like a console in the middle and there's so many different things to choose from, but I was thinking of just getting like three actual individual recliners. And I've done that with my recliners that I've had before that are couches. I'll just sit on opposite ends for like a month and then go to the other end and sit for a month. But if I got three chairs, I could just keep rotating them around because I want to be the center chair when I'm watching.
Oh, yeah.
Just rotate them around so they get even wear because the first recliner couch I had, I'd always sat on the same end and it ended up where I wore out the one end and I had a perfectly good couch on the other end, you know. Yeah. And so, but yeah, interesting. And if you can't say, did that Mike Schramm, was that a mail order thing that he had a problem with?
Yeah, he ordered them sight unseen and okay. Hadn't sat in them. I mean, they looked good. Everything was great. They were just not comfortable. Like to the point, I believe he was like, they were uncomfortable. So, and that's nothing against the company. It's nothing against the brand, anything that he had. They didn't work for him. Right. And, but the lesson is try them out because you never
know. Exactly.
You have to try them out. And to me, it's like when I go to do it, I think of how long I've had my chairs, 20 plus years. I think to me, it's worth the money. Even if like I have no place around me and I've been looking, I'll fly somewhere to do this because the money you're going to invest in flying to test these out. It's a weekend vacation. You go away and you go and test some theater chairs. What does it cost you? $500,000 for me and my wife to go away for the weekend to invest in something that you're going to have for another 20 years.
Yeah, that's
and
good
we
point.
Like doing this stuff, right? It's like this and to do it sight unseen. I don't know. And I'd have to ask Mike, I'd have to ask him like what he had to pay for shipping to return them. That might have been the cost of a trip to go see him. I don't know. I don't know.
Right.
But it's not cheap to return these things. And he had to pay for that. And, you know, and I feel bad for him. What I really feel bad for him is how I know how excited he was to get them.
Oh, yeah. There's nothing worse.
Oh, and then you get them in and you sit down and you're like, oh, crap. I'm on the Flintstones. These feel like rocks. whatever it was. And it's sad. You're like that you were looking forward to them for so long. And then next thing you know, it's like you're sending them back. And it's like, I'd be sad sending them back.
Oh,
like,
yeah, no
I got to make these work. But when they don't work, they don't work. And,
right.
You know, that's why I said, I'm like, do the research, travel. It's worth the time because especially people listening to this podcast, people like us, we're going to be sitting in these chairs a long time.
Yeah.
And I mean, like I said, I've sat in mine for 20 years. And my wife and I, when we built this house, we thought this was the last house we were ever going to live in. I love this house. I built this house. And to think that we're going to be moving soon and be like, we're laughing at it. Like, oh my God, we're going to be moving soon. We could potentially be in the next house even longer. And that's weird to think because I'm 52. So I'm like, 20 years from now, hopefully if I make it to 72, right? But I'm only 72 years old. I could be there till I'm 82, which would be 30 years from now. I'm going to be in this house. The house I'm not even in yet? I'll be in this house longer. I feel like I've been here forever. So I'm like, my point is those chairs that I bought, the next set of chairs I buy could be even longer than the ones I'm in now, which these will stay here for my son, you know, in the theater. No. So it's worth the time and a little bit extra money for something. I mean, maybe you could try to do what Mike Schramm did, do a, you know, sight unseen or sight unsat, and you get lucky. But
My gut feeling is buy local in a store if I can. The only thing I would feel good about with Costco is that they have like such a good return policy on stuff, or at least talk to them and say, hey, if I order this and I absolutely don't like it, What are you going to do, you know? And then just order one of them and see what it is. But otherwise, my gut tells me, because there was one time when I had, this was a few years back, I had bought some furniture at a furniture store in my old town, and I couldn't believe the stuff that they were sending me, you know, because I'd sit in the one in the showroom, and, well, they don't give you what's in the showroom like they did years ago. We'll send one up from another town and have it delivered to you. It was just unreal how many times I went, because in that the stuff actually passed the manufacturer inspection and were sending me. And I went around and around and around and finally got a good one, but I still didn't like it ended up getting something different later down the road and spend a little more money. You know, kind of the old adage, you get what you pay for sometimes. And
yeah,
but
it really is. And it's, it's tough, but sometimes you got to make things work too. It's because you're constrained by budget or you're constrained by what's available to you. But yeah, it's, you know, something like that. There's nothing worse than being uncomfortable.
Yeah. Oh, no kidding.
You know, in something that, like, this is a place you're going to sit all the time. It's like my chairs. Now I have people over for football games and they'll fall asleep. They just recline and I'll be like, Derek, wake up. Wake up. The game's over. So comfortable. So, but yeah.
Good advice. I'm glad we talked about that, because that just kind of makes me feel better about thinking just staying with something that I've actually tried to sit in, see what it's like.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to find. That's what I said. I'm trying to find something local as well. Ideally, that's what you want to do. But if you see something online that catches your eye and you can't, and like I said, we're constrained by what's available to us, and that might be it, right? Like, so this is all that's available locally for me to look at. But if you see something online and they look fantastic and they got the fancy lights and the plugs and all the fun stuff and don't get like, oh yeah, I'm just going to order them, and go and test them out and really, you know, get your butt in there.
And I really don't want all them bells and whistles, to be honest. Some of them, you know, I just want to have the power recline and the power adjustable headrest, and that's what I want, you know.
I would like that as well. Like, I don't, when I watch a movie now, I don't recline because I don't have the power head. I don't have any headrest. I bought mine come up. Like, if you lay back, it'll hold your head up. But if you sit upright in mine, it comes right up to my shoulder, because I didn't want anything up to my ears, because I don't want anything blocking the sound, right? So I chose these specifically. And then when you recline, because your body stretches out, it actually, your head drops to that level. But I would like to have that headrest, like similar to what you see here, and to be able to recline a little and prop my head forward. You know what I mean? Like a pillow would be better. And I've seen that in the chairs, and I love that, because right now I always just sit upright every time I watch a movie, because I want to be in that same position, be able to see the screen and hear but if I could back, you know, recline a little bit and prop my head forward, that would be nice. I would like some chargers in the chairs, because like I could put my remote in there and have it charge instead of having it on the table as you walk in the room. That would be nice. All the lights, I would disconnect.
I don't want
the lights. Or I would hope I could connect them to my lighting system so that when the lights dim, they would dim. I would try that first. Otherwise, I'd get under there and snip those things right off, because I don't want them on when I'm watching a movie.
Sure. Yeah. Me neither. That's the thing I thought too. I'd try and disconnect them somehow if I get something that has it, because I don't want it.
Yeah. If I can, like I said, when I turn my lights off when a movie starts, if my chairs go out too, I'm fine with that. If they come on when the lights come on, I'm fine with that. But they can't be on when the movie's playing. And I've been in theaters like that, and I'm like, you can't say anything. You can't. You're like, your screen looks like crap. These big red lights are just reflecting onto your screen. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, and then some of them they have, you can change all these different colors and stuff. Yeah. And I thought, big deal. I wouldn't turn them on anyway, so that doesn't mean anything to me. You know, other people, it will. Some people get into that, but I just don't. But, yeah, and I took and I had them put can lighting in this room too and section it off and everything, and I just haven't put regular switches in there because I was going to see, do I really need dimmers, or am I just going to turn them on and off, and I wouldn't have them on that much anyway, and I did have them put a couple spots on back wall that would be back behind, and I found actually my Chromebook is sitting on top of the box of the lights I got at Costco. They had these ones that are Wi-Fi, and they're just, you can dim them and everything. There's different colors, but I thought it would be back there. I could probably just dim them down enough where you have a little light. Yeah. But I just figured that's going to be one of the things I'm going to figure out when I get in there, because, I talk Lutron stuff to the electrician and they just say, I'm going back and forth. And I just thought, I'm just going to wait till I get in the house and I'll figure that all out, because I'm capable of installing that stuff myself if I decide I want it and everything. But do you do anything with your lighting, or are you just on and off?
Oh, no. No, I had, when I built the room, I had a Lutron remote. So it went right to the switch. So the wall plate had the remote sensor on it. Okay. And it came with a remote. I picked this out specifically back in 2001 so that I would be able to do that. Now, that remote also had different settings on it where you could actually just hit the button and all the lights would just dim like that. They just dim right down. Or there was another setting where it would take like 10 seconds to dim. So I had the Philips remote that I had, programmable Philips remote I had. I had buttons on there so that when I started the movie, I hit play, and then I would hit that button on the Philips remote, and the sensor was mounted at the back side of the room, pointed at, like, over my head at the wall plate so that it could see it and be able to actually, and now the lights would slowly dim, and at first you wouldn't even know it. And then as the movie started, as the credits started to come up and the opening, your FBI stuff, it would already be dimming, but you'd barely notice it because it would take 10 to 15 seconds. And then as the movie went black, that's when all of a sudden it went whoop and everything shut off, and be like, that was neat. Plus the other part was I'd already put the remote down. So it was another 10 or 15 seconds later that the lights dimmed. So people were like, how the hell did you do that? But I had done it 10 or 15 seconds ago. Right. So that was really cool. I had that for years. And then probably within the last five years, I went to all hue lighting. And now I have, everything goes by that. It doesn't do that. I haven't figured that out. I haven't really researched it either, but
Aura seems to be big into hue lighting, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. When he started doing, I had already bought mine and I heard him. I remember him doing his outdoor lighting he did with it. I did a little bit of that. I've been experimenting with that at Christmas time. But yeah, I've got hue lighting pretty much in almost every room of the house now. I've been just adding here and there over the years because they're not cheap. The bulbs, they're like the bulbs I have in my theater. I have four sconces on the wall and they're the little candlelight bulbs, candle bulbs things. Those, I think those bulbs are like $40, or $50, because they're the full color ones. So, you know, I put those in the room, and then the wall plate is a Hue wall plate that I replaced that. And what it does is when you hit the button on it, it's like hitting a button on your phone or something, and it'll change it to a setting. It has four different buttons on it. So when I leave the room, I don't actually shut the lights out. The button I hit for off, it turns all the lights off in the room, but I have the track lighting in the back where all the, my memorabilia is. And that all just goes to like a nice purple pinkish color.
Oh, nice.
It's very, very dim at the back of the room. So whenever you go in there, at least that's like barely lit. When I, on my remote, if you go to Xbox, the whole room goes green. If you go to PlayStation, the whole room goes blue. If you go to Kaleidoscape, the room goes to like half dim. If you go to Apple TV, which is regular television, it gets slightly brighter than that. And then I have a button at the bottom to be able to just hit dim, and it'll just dim the lights. So I'll hit play on the remote and then hit dim, and the lights dim. And that's about all I do.
Does your Kaleidoscape have some options to it where you can tie it into lighting and it'll do different scenarios for you?
Yeah. It doesn't, there's no options for me right now with my system because it doesn't work with Harmony or anything like that. But if you do a Control 4 system, there's a couple other ones, but they're all higher end, like really expensive systems that like we all are using Harmony right now. I've looked into it. Brett Bjorkqvist, who's been on here, used to work for Kaleidoscape. Now he's on his own. He took the Control 4 class and stuff. So he's familiarized me with how it works, how expensive it is to get started. Money you need to just get going with it. They're super expensive systems, but they're so adaptable. Like the idea is for people will run their whole house on these things.
Yeah.
I just want to run a room, and there are ways to do it. And it does bring the price down. But I don't want to invest that money now. I'm going to put that in the next one, but yes, there is capabilities for like with the Kaleidoscape, because there's flags in these movies that people like myself, I don't use yet, but there's flags in the movies that when the movie gets to the certain part, like gets to the credits, your lights will just come on. You haven't touched a damn thing. Your system like the Kaleidoscape will tell your system, the credits are rolling, and you can actually program, I want my lights to come half on. So now you'll sit there. And then when you get to, say you're in a Marvel movie and you get to a part of the movie where like the end credit scene comes on, the lights go back down you haven't touched the thing. So that's the kind of the fun stuff that I'm looking forward to when I, in my new room, be able to add that in. And, but you can also have shades go on. It all gets triggered because that's the movie will have all of these triggers embedded within the movie. So like if you need shades drawn or you need, you know, this to happen or whatever, it can all be done with these systems. But that's why those systems cost a lot more money. You know, I was trying to do a makeshift way of doing it. I'm still working it out of my head because, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. But right now, Mark, I got to hit a button to turn my lights out.
I'm gonna be perfectly fine. You know, I've got a Harmony Hub and a Harmony Elite remote and everything too. Yeah. And I'm just gonna run everything off that. And I got when they had them put a conduit up to where, you know, for I can run the, I'm gonna get a fiber optic HDMI cable. And I figure I'd pull a couple Cat 6 through there, and one would be for the IR to come back to the Harmony Hub, and the other one for network to plug into the projector. But I also had them put an extra Cat 6 down under the screen in case I needed that Harmony Hub or something died on me and I needed to get a different IR kind of system that I could have the put an IR sensor up there, but I really like my Harmony remote. Yeah. I mean, I've had a Harmony remote of some sort for years, it's just so disappointing they quit making them because it was such a good product, and nothing that's come out really seems to rival it. You know, I mean, what is there, Sofa Baton, and I don't know if anything else. Yeah. Those haven't really gotten that great of reviews from what I've seen.
But it's tough though too, because you're taking something like the Harmony Elite that I have. That took years. Of iterations. Trial and error, all of this, and they worked all that in to what we have today, and for a company to come out and even come close to that, I still think is great. I mean, it's great that I don't have one. I'm in that middle market right now where it's like, you know, I'm building soon, so why would I? And I'm going to be going in the other direction. So, but I think it's great that they're doing that, and hopefully they get a little bit of a leg up, a little head start, learning from watching what Harmony Elites do. And hopefully within a year or two, they'll be right there. Sure. Right.
Yep,
it's going to take time. Yeah. It's going to take time. And for the people that are using them, like Andrew's using one, Tom and Rob are using them. And it's like, for the people that are using them, they're getting that experience that when, as they grow, they'll be able to tell us, okay, now, the latest update, this thing's fantastic. Or I think where you're going to get the biggest boon is their next model, right? Because they're going to find people they've had hands on with this thing. And that's where you get, just like we were saying earlier, the best experience we get is when we're sitting in our room, right? Do I want to tweak my speakers? Do I want to do this? It's the same with the remote, and Sofa Baton will learn that having multiple people sitting in their rooms experiencing it. What would you like to see done differently? So they're taking in all that feedback, and I think the next model they come out with, that's the one that probably will get them as close to Harmony as we can get for now. But
I think you're right.
You know, and hopefully that happens within the next year or so. You know,
Harmony to keep on running. You know, when they announced that they were going to be closing shop on that, I went and I got myself a spare battery for mine to have on hand in case mine dies. I can replace it, you know, and hopefully keep on living, because that Harmony one I had, that baby kept on running and everything. But for some reason, I wanted the hub and everything, so I went that route, you know. Well, it was harder. It was getting to be harder to program that Harmony One compared to their hub now and everything. So,
yeah, I love my Elite. And I actually, when I built the room, I installed the repeater, the Niles repeater system. I have a sensor at the front of the room, and then that runs everything into my rack. And what's nice is, almost the only thing in my rack right now that doesn't, and I didn't even look, it might even have it. Everything in my system actually runs off of a plug now instead of the IR repeater.
Huh.
So, you know, have you ever seen a Niles system where they have the little, you run a wire with, and it has the little IR repeater on the end of it, and you'd pop that to the front wherever your IR sensor is on the piece of equipment. All of my stuff is now connected from the backside, and because you just plug it in to the Niles. So everything, it doesn't have to see the light of anything. Everything's all automatically goes in. The Marantz does that.
So what are you plugging it into on the Marantz? Were you using the little IR thing that in the front that you based on that?
So how to start? All right. I push a button on the remote, right? The my Harmony Elite sends that signal to the hub, right? Okay. And then the hub puts out a signal. Okay. So my hub is at the back left corner of my room. At the back right corner of my room. At the front right corner of my room, at the very top, right next to the screen, you can't even see it, it's behind the speaker grill cloth, is an IR sensor. Okay. It's a wall plate sensor. And you'd mount that at the front of your room. These systems you can buy. Go on Amazon, look up Niles IR repeater systems. They're like $50. Okay. So then that runs a wire, and that comes with like 100 feet of wire. It's like, it looks like telephone wire. Okay. It's got like a green, a red, a blue. And so you run that to the little Niles box. Okay. You wire that into the Niles box. And then on the backside of the Niles box, you'll have like, they look like a bunch of headphone jacks. I forget what gauge they are.
Sure.
Those headphone jacks, when you buy the kit, will come with these repeaters. These, now you get another wire, you plug in like a headphone jack, and on the end of it, it'll have a little red, like a dark red IR repeater. And the way I'd been running my system since like 2001 is you'd run this wire to the front of your whatever piece of equipment and put that, tape it over the IR sensor on the front of the piece of equipment. Now, and you have the Marantz, you could add this system and you run that same gauge of like a headphone jack, whatever, a double end, and you go from the Niles repeater right into the back of your Marantz.
Into one of them trigger ports?
There's an IR repeater trigger on the back.
But then I guess I never even really saw that one back there. So
yeah, there's an IR repeater on the back. The Kaleidoscape has it. The Zapedi has it. And like I said, I didn't even look. I haven't even looked. I keep meaning to, but it's one of those things. I haven't gone back there, but I don't even know if the Panasonic has it or not. It might, for all I know. But that's great, because then there's no issues with the remote seeing it, you know, and especially when it's in another room, like the situation I have.
Yeah. Cause mine's going to be another room, you know, cause I always figured the remote was talking to the hub by RF.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I just, you know, put the hub, you know, down by the equipment, and it seemed to always work everything, you know.
Right.
And I was just figuring that's what I was going to do. I was going to put the hub in the same rack, and it would just, you know, bounce around and do what it does. So hopefully that still works. But otherwise, I'll have to, you know, look into doing what you're just talking about, because my whole thing was for the projector, though, I was going to, that extra Cat 6 was going to be hooked up to an IR sensor put on, because the Panasonic has a IR sensor on the front and the back, and just put it on the back one, run that over, then plug that Cat 6 into the Harmony hub to make sure the projector got. But yeah, I guess that'll be a trial and error thing. So I'll have to see what I'll have to do there.
Yeah, I have I have a sensor coming off of the hub going to the back of my projector, because my projector has a sensor on the back of it, but I don't know if it has maybe it has a plug, but I just have a sensor placed back there, and that's what turns my projector on.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I really like that Niles system. It's enabled me to do a lot more stuff over the years, more smoothly than just the flat out Harmony Elite.
I'll check that out. I'll see how things function when I get it set up and then go from there. But it's nice to know that option. So
yeah, and that, like I said, they're fairly cheap now. I think it's like 50-60 bucks for a set, and then you can buy more repeaters. I have a ton of repeaters, but you can buy more repeaters and stuff. And I think mine has 6 jacks. It's a 6 output thing, and they have ones where you can actually put one in and it'll double off. So like you can have 2 repeaters come off of the same jack. You can have a bubble like a Harmony Elite, or a Harmony hub is actually it sends out a signal. You could send out something like that. They have those things too. So you put the whole thing in front of it wherever the room is. They're meant to be like whole home manipulation. So you could have a repeater up in another room and you hit the remote. That was why I did it originally, so that I could be up, because this was before we had home Wi-Fi, and right now I want to go down and watch a movie. I just open the Harmony on my phone, hit whatever setting I want. Oh, let's put on Apple TV Plus. Boom. And then I'll go down 20 minutes or 10 minutes later, and everything's already ready, warmed up, ready to go. But back 20 years ago, we didn't have that. So I wanted to have sensors in other places of the house. And obviously I never got to that point, but that was my plan.
Yeah. I was just kind of sitting here running it through my head, because I'll have, the amps will come on via the trigger cable.
Triggers cable.
So I got my Marantz.
Yep.
And then I have an NVIDIA Shield. So those would be the two main things that would have to, well, on the projector, mm-hmm. but the Panasonic, that could be another thing. But so I don't have a lot of stuff I have to control, but you want it to work when you want it to work. So.
Yeah, exactly. And it was funny, for years I was having trouble finding which jack would work with the Niles. And when it finally, well, one, and I only had one piece. Well, I had the Zepedi and then I got the Kaleidoscape. So it wasn't, I didn't really have much that would work off of those jacks anyways. But I was having trouble. I tried to use it with the Zepedi. It didn't work. And because you need the specific jack, the specific cable. And what I found out is when I got the Marantz processor, I need this jack to turn my amps on. Okay. So I put that in and I was like, and it turned out that same jack is what the Niles uses. So that's what I was like, oh, I bought like 10 of them. I'm like, all right, I might need these because they're like $4 each or something stupid. Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, just give me like 10 of them and I can use them. And I stopped plugging everything in. I'm like, woo, everything runs a lot smoother. Now. Nice. I don't have to fiddle with that thing. And it keeps the front of your rack looking nice because now you don't have that wire sticking down that I used to have there.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. See?
You gave me more homework to look at.
Well, I'm trying to keep you busy until you're in your room and you can actually sit down and have fun with it.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that time when I get to actually sit down and look at something. Because, you know, when I watch you and Art doing them home theater tours, I thought, yeah, maybe I'll be able to do that, you know, down the road here, get that all set up and
nice.
And give you guys a look at it and see what you think.
That would be awesome. I have somebody coming on in a couple of weeks, I think I scheduled. He's coming on and he's in the middle of building his theater right now. The plan that we have is he's going to come on Takeover Tuesday. Then he's going to, maybe in a month or so, we'll do a home theater tours. And then he's going to come back and we'll talk scenes in his new theater.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that interview too, because he's just just reached out to me and he's been listening for a little while. I've never talked to him before, but he's going to be a fun one to listen to because he's going from like 0 to 100.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's one of those guys that normally we would be like, oh, he's not really into home theater. He can just get a home theater, but he is really into home theater, but he also has the ability to get one. So he's just building. He's like, this is going to like, what I've done over 30 years, he's doing like, I can't wait to do that. And he's doing it. So I can't wait to talk to him and that inspiration and what pull that out of him. Like what made you like, cause most people don't do that. Right. Most people I've talked to, I should say, most people I've talked to are guys like myself. That's like, we dabbled in it. Like you were like, your brother had a theater. You're like, I want to do this. So now you start learning. It takes you years and years to learn. So it's going to be fun. So it's fun to meet all these different people like yourself and all the different experiences, how similar we are, but how different we are. But we all have that common thing. It's so cool.
It's so fun to watch all these other people's rooms because, you know, it's just, how did you dream that up? You know, you can get little tips and everything and, you know, oh man, yeah, I never thought of going that route. You know, all those kind of things. That's what makes it really fun is when other people share their experiences with it.
And it helps out a lot. Yeah. And that's what's, I mean, you think about, we're all like, most of us, I should say, we all have that engineer brain kind of, cause we're trying to work our rooms around and get to a certain degree. So we like the tech part. So we have that engineer brain, but there's also that artistic part of it. And when you get into that artistic creative part of it with our rooms, that's where it gets to, like, you think you've thought of everything and then you see somebody else's room and you're like, how did I not think of that? That's fantastic. Yeah, exactly. I've been doing this 30 years and I'm like, oh my God, that's awesome. You know? And it's so much fun. It's so much fun. And then, it's a blast. Having a blast.
Yeah. So do you use your Zepedi much now that you got your Kaleidoscape, or is it kind of?
No.
It kills me when you're doing a podcast with somebody and you're talking to the guys, oh, just bought it, downloading it. That part I think is so cool. You know, I mean, the whole thing is cool, but I mean, man, that would be nice to just be able to have that option. And now my new house, I'm going to have fiber internet at my new house. And I'm just thinking, man, that could come like, you know, I got options from 250 megabit up and down to 5 gigabit up and down. And I'm not going to go that route. I'm going to probably go the 500 megabit route because it costs like what I'm paying now. But yeah, that's going to be nice. I'm looking forward to getting that in there. But
I have the gig. I have a gig speed, and and what's funny is that Kaleidoscape takes it all. If it can, it'll take it all. Which that just amazes me. That like the tech to be able to do that to do them, because you know what it's like to rip a movie. And you're ripping it in your system, and it takes you an hour, right? Yeah. And you're like a 4K movie. So it's not even leaving the house. It's going from this player to the, you know, from your the drive you have that's ripping it, that's spinning the disc. It's going from there to your computer, which is right there. All we're doing is transferring that information, and that takes over an hour. I can do a whole movie in 10 minutes from somewhere else in the world. The tech that takes, and like I said, like if I downloaded a movie right now, all of a sudden your picture, it happened to John last week. I bought a movie while I was talking to him, and I was like, oh no, and everything just went because it puts this giant like suck on your internet, because you're it's going to take almost, if it can get it, it'll take it all, right? And like nothing else. And you just like, but imagine, just it's crazy. I think if you had a higher gigabit in the house, that's the point. Like, say you could get a 2 gig or the 5 gig connection, you'd be able to download and there'd be no effect to the rest of your house. And that's the point. And you'd still have that movie in 10 minutes, you know? So that's what would be cool about it. But,
you know, lately, and I'm sure this isn't a new thought, but when you guys have been talking about, you know, you're going over streaming movies and the difference between streaming and, you know, physical media or Kaleidoscape and everything, I'm on the same wagon there, because there's streaming just isn't like what you can get from physical. But why couldn't it be, you know, it's getting to be like a fiber download and everything. Why couldn't, like, say, Vudu or Apple or whoever, you know, if you're willing to pay for the service that, and you've got the bandwidth, that they couldn't have a tier of their service that is lossless.
Right.
Now, maybe that is, I know there's a lot, the reason they do compression is because there's not an infinite amount of internet bandwidth, but you know, man, that would be nice if you just pay for that service and just you're streaming it real time and lossless, but it's probably easier said than done.
I don't think it's a matter of easier said than done. I think they could do it. And I think they want to do it, and they probably will do it someday, especially Apple. But the thing is, what's funny is I've been talking about it for years. And I had an idea 15 years ago when we started just streaming television was in its infancy and stuff. And I was like, you could just have a box on your television and have them, like at the time I was watching, say, Big Bang Theory, right? Well, say Big Bang Theory airs on Thursdays at 8 o'clock, right? Well, instead of you streaming it and worrying about losing it, like if you lose power or you lose something, you lose your connection at 8 o'clock, you're going to miss Big Bang Theory. Well, why can't they upload that like on Monday night when everybody's in bed asleep, and then and it just flagged to turn on your system? Basically, that's what we're doing now. That's what Kaleidoscape does. They download it to you. Like some of these movies, like Top Gun Maverick was on my system days in advance. But
that's so cool too.
Right. But what they're doing is they're uploading it, but then you don't get access to it until that specific time. So they could do everything that you're talking about. And that, like, I've had that idea. They want to do that. But here's the issue. The size of like what you'd have to have, right? These movies are like 70, 80 gigabytes big. So you'd have to have a decent size hard drive just to hold a couple of movies. Like, so you say even a terabyte. So, okay, you have a terabyte hard drive in your Apple TV. Okay, you could save like 10 movies. You can, or you can rent a movie, but it's full lossless. It's all that. That's all possible. But here's where I think the biggest hiccup is. It's only you and I that want to do that.
Yeah.
Right. And the people listening to this podcast, we're such a small percentage that it's like, what, like if you go on any of the forums or you go on any of the reviews on like what's coming out, Apple just had their thing last week, right? Nothing about the Apple TV. And because, and all the speculation was it was going the other way. Everybody wants the Apple TV to get cheaper. And that's the biggest hiccup with Apple TV right now. It's the exact same hiccup that people have with Kaleidoscape. Price. Why would I buy an Apple TV? The Roku is only $50 or 60. Their high end one's like $80, right? But to get an Apple TV, it's $180. So all the requests out there for Apple TV, the majority of them are give us a smaller, cheaper one. And then you get like a couple of donkeys like us that are like, can you give us a bigger, more expensive one? And they're like, why are they going to put... Now, I think they are coming out with it and they will do it someday because they do want to be on the leading edge, cutting edge. And they want to be able to say, we offer you lossless. But offering lossless sound is completely different than offering lossless sound and video.
Yeah.
That's a giant file. So there's a lot more manipulation there and it's cost analysis really right there. Like what's this going to cost us and how is this going to pay off? Physical media is going away. Look at 4K disc sales. They're down, right? Compared to all the other mediums, the DVD and Blu-ray. How many people really want lossless audio video? Most people are happy with streaming. You go online. I had a debate over the weekend. Streaming is better. No, it's not. Right? So you have all of these conversations. And to the majority of the population, streaming is better because they don't have the capability to take advantage of the extra information that you get in a disc. So that to them, they watch Disney Plus on their 65-inch television and a sound bar, and they're like, that looks nice. And you put in a 4K disc, and you're like, looks the same to me.
Yep.
And they're not getting any benefit in sound. They're not getting they're really not pushing the limit of their image because it's only 65 inches, and it's like the brightness looks that they probably have it set to vivid anyways. So the majority of the population, they don't care. And that's fine. But you know what I mean? So like that's why I think. And that's what makes something like Kaleidoscape like, okay, well, if you want it this way, that's that market. I don't know if Apple comes out with something, that's great, but it won't have all the extra bells and whistles that even Kaleidoscape has. So I think it's coming though. I do think it's coming. It's just, why would they do it? When you look at it,
they figure out a way to where it makes business sense for them or whatever. And you know, in defense of streaming, it has come a long way from when they first started. I mean, it is decent and everything. And some stuff does look really good. I mean, even though I wish I had it in surround sound, I've been watching The Lord of the Rings, man, that really looks good. And I've just got, you know, my Vizio is 4K resolution, but I bought it in 2016, so it's still SDR. It isn't HDR. But the first time I watched, I go, wow, that looks really good, you know. And it's not like I haven't seen when I watch Apple TV Plus. There's good stuff on there, too, you know. But, you know, all you got to do is see something that's a dark scene, and then you got all that banding in it, and you just, yep, that's not Blu-ray.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, you get crushing in there, you get banding in the skies, you get all sorts of stuff that when you go to the Blu-ray or 4K disc and it's just not there. It's just beautiful and you see that difference. And the bigger the screen you have, the more you can more flaws you see on one side and you appreciate the beauty on the other side, right? And it's And that's fun. And it, but when you, when like most of the world is screaming at you to get cheaper, then you get a very small percentage going, get expensive.
And we're the rare breed that doesn't mind throwing money at our hobby here. And if you, like you've said it many times, I've heard you say it, is that if I'm going to spend this kind of money on a system, why would I want to feed it a lesser source? Yeah. So, only makes
sense. You're only as strong as your weakest link. And if you just, and that's what we've done over the years, right? It's like, we just keep improving our links here and there. And it's like, is it a big step? No, but it's a step and I'm going to take it. You know, if I can take it, I want to take it. When we first started out, they were big steps, going from a 32-inch television to a 65-inch rear projection television. Big step. Going from 65 to 104, I think, for a projection. That was a big step. Going to HD, that's a big step. That was all fun stuff that we went through. And now you're getting to the part where it's like, I don't know if I have any big steps left in my, I don't know if the tech's going to allow it. I don't know if we have it, but you don't just stand still. It's like, look, that step's there and that step's there. So
I'm really anxious to get the HD part of, or the HDR part of stuff, you know, because I've been to friends' houses that have it, you know, but it's just not like sitting down in your own living room and being able to experience it and see what it's like. So that part I'm getting anxious for, and that'll be fun.
It is. It's fantastic. And it's Mike Schramm went through that. I've had other listeners, same thing, went through, they get a nice OLED and you're like, oh my God, it like changes your catalog. Right. And you start going through and like, I didn't even see that before. And that's what's so much fun. And it takes years of that experience with the other display that you had of being like, oh, I thought this was as good as it could get. Right. And then you go on to something else and you're like, oh wow. And that's the fun. That's the amazement that we get, and the what gives you chills, and you're like, and you start calling people down and their eyes glaze over.
And then it's funny, like, God, it took me the longest time to get my brother to tune to the HD channels of cable. And because people just, well, that's the number I know to punch in. Well, hell yeah, but look at this, you know? And I know it was one time we were over at their place, and it was during a football game, and they had other people there. And when it was halftime and everybody went up to get snacks, I took and I turned it to the HD channel. And when everybody came back down, they go, holy cow, what did they do on cable here? Boy, that picture sure looks good now. And I just said, yeah, I turned it to the HD channel.
You're on the right channel.
And then after that, I finally got my brother to start tuning to those channels, you know. And,
oh my God, that was a fun, fun time. It was like trying to educate people and like show them and be like, no, I don't care. They would rather push the same like three buttons, channel 242. That's what I know I watch the game on. Yeah, but it looks better on 744. Yeah, but does it really? And they go 242. What are you doing? It's like the habit of the motion of your thumb is more important than a good image on the screen. They'd be like, I don't know 744. Well, you do now.
It was like, why did you buy that TV to begin with? Well, it's supposed to be better.
Well look at how wide it is. Yeah, it's all stretched out. Nobody has an eggplant-shaped head like that. Come on. if you saw him on the street, you'd laugh. You're like, no, this is HD. No, it's not. Oh, God. Oh, that was so much fun. And every now and then you get treated to it now, even today. You go in someplace, you're like, oh my God, I haven't seen this in years. a whole back idiot. Oh, man. All right. Well, let's go out on that high note. calling the world idiots. We're throwing money left and right, and they're the idiots. Oh. So fun. Oh man, Mark, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for reaching out.
I appreciate it. Man, I'm looking at the clock here and I go, holy cow, where did the time go?
I know. It's what's so much fun about it. But Yeah, thank you very much for reaching out. Really appreciate it. Anybody listening, like Mark, just reach out. And is it that hard, Mark?
No, this was painless. And you know, I got up this morning and go, yeah, that's gonna be fun. You know, I was really looking forward to it. So that helped too, you know. I mean, it's just normally I probably, well, when you got something that you love and you're passionate about, it's easy to talk about. You know, right. Normally I'm not a huge conversationalist unless it's, you know, topics I'm aware of and stuff. But this is to me just so easy to talk about. And especially when you can talk to somebody else that enjoys it too.
Right. Yeah. So thank you. Thank you, Mark. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for listening. Yeah. Thanks for supporting the show. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for putting on the show because, boy, every time I see a new episode, I'm just, all right, got a new episode to listen to. And I guess, you know, I have a different podcast that I download and stuff, but it's always yours, HD Guys, and AV Rant. Those are at the top of my playlist. I get them listened to, and I think I'm all caught up with everything. So I'm going to, when we get done here, I'm going to see what the temperature is outside. God, it was 39 degrees here this morning. So I wanted to wait and let it warm up a little bit before I go for a bike ride. But I got the latest episode of AV Rant, so that'll be going in my earbuds and listening to that and seeing what I can pick up. But, you know, the problem with some of that is I've had all this stuff bouncing around in my head about this new house that a lot of times I'll just catch myself and I'll hear you guys say something and go, oh, crap, now I got to rewind this and listen to it because I was totally off in a different world thinking about, you know, this house and theater and stuff. So
yeah,
but
yeah, I've actually listened to AV Rant a couple of times. Like if I've been through my podcast, I'll be like, I'll put it on again. And the same thing, I'll be on bike rides or I'll do the lawn and stuff. And you start thinking about something they said and you're missing everything else they're saying. Yep. Right. But then when you go back and listen to it, it's all fresh again.
Yep.
So yeah, so much fun. So, all right, let's get out of here. Thank you very much, Mark. I really appreciate it. Thanks.
It was a pleasure, and hope we'll get to do this again sometime. Hopefully by the time we can talk again, I'll either be working on that theater. I'll just kind of keep you in the loop on what I'm doing and maybe email you some pictures what I'm doing or whatever, how it's going. But
we'll get you on HT tours when you're all done.
We'll do that.
Then we'll have you back, and you can talk about some of the scenes and stuff.
I'm anxious because, man, I'm building up a library to watch because I'm just kind of holding back on stuff because I want to wait. But anyway,
cool. Yeah. All right, buddy. Thank you very much. Thanks for listening.
You bet.
Go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production, with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.